we're in kind of a weird area in North America. Everybody in North America knows somebody who gambles a great deal of money on sports. It's just that it wasn't legalized for the longest time. And now we have most of our sports leagues, particularly Major League Baseball and the NBA, opening their arms to legalized gambling because sports gambling is being legalized in more and more states in the United States, still not necessarily up here. And, you know, and now we're having a discussion that I'm willing to bet folks in the UK and in England and in Europe have been having for a while, you know, sponsorship of teams. Are you going to have a gambling insider on your baseball telecast? Things of this nature. Tell us a little bit about why this study is so important and what got your attention about it. Because it's, you know, I've said there's a darker side to gambling, obviously. There's a darker side to anything that has the potential to be an addiction. But there's something about this report that really kind of sends a shiver through the spine of somebody who's, you know, we're in a stage right now where we're just in the nation stages of gambling and sports embracing each other in North America.
Yeah, and I'm actually really saddened to see what's happening in North America because, you know, it's like people say about tobacco, well, If it had never arrived, do you think it would even be legalized? So, you know, people say, well, you know, all you can do is regulate it because it's already here. But when you have the lucky situation that gambling on sport isn't legal, to see you, not you, but to see in North America it being legalized and opened up when you don't have to do it, it's not pre-existing. I'm finding it really saddening, and also I'm wondering whether also to feel quite ashamed that it's partly because of the relaxation of gambling, the modern relaxation of gambling in the UK in 2005 by Tony Blair's Labour government, which has produced this explosion in sports betting here, whether that is leading to relaxation of sports betting in North America and around the world. And partly because we're setting a precedent, which in my opinion is a terrible precedent, but also because we're enabling the gambling companies to become so powerful and so wealthy that presumably their muscle mm-hmm. and their power and their lobbying is probably more powerful on the governments around the world.
I find it interesting because, as you mentioned, and this number is staggering, a total of $14.4 billion was lost by people.
No, pounds.
Billion pounds. Yeah, worse.
So total of 14. What would that be? $16.5 billion, something like that.
Right, $16.5 billion was lost
something
by...
Something like that.
Yeah, by people betting in the UK from April 2017 to March 2018. That's an increase from 13.8 billion pounds the previous year. 5.3 billion pounds of that was lost gambling online, which is a 12.8% increase on the previous year. You know, and as I said, any study into this obviously is going to, you know, the stories of personal loss, of suicide, things of that nature are going to be, you know, are going to be the things that grab your attention. But what really got my attention, and I admit I hadn't really thought of this, was it seems to me, David, and maybe this is the UK's experience, but it seems to me that we're kind of raising a generation of sports fans who are actually gambling fans who just get their kicks by watching sports. They're gambling fans as opposed to sports fans.
Exactly, and that's the really striking thing about this. And over here, Sky, which is the main football broadcaster, they also have a betting company called Sky Bet, and they have a logo. It means more when there's money on it. And as an older generation of football fan, I've always found that intensely irritating. Like, mm-hmm. No, it doesn't. Football means a lot. Sport means a huge amount. It's in our hearts. It does not mean more when I've got £5 on it with you, Sky Bet, thank you very much. But I said this to Darren McGee, the academic, and this is kind of how we met when we had our first conversation. And I said, you know, that thing about it means more when there's money on it, it's ridiculous. And he said, not for the younger generation. He said, that slogan has absolutely won. It's absolutely got the younger generation. To them, not only does it mean more when there's money on it, it doesn't really mean anything at all when there isn't money on it. And one of the saddest stories, which I included in the piece, was somebody who told him that these guys have grown up as football fans as kids. And he told him that when he was a kid, he just loved football, like we can all relate to. And he used to rush home from school to watch Manchester United playing in the Champions League, and it was the biggest treat on a Tuesday night, 7:30 p.m., you know, 7:45, the game kicks off. And these people have been absolutely soaked in advertising, sponsorship, marketing, relentlessly from betting companies. And once you sign up on an app, you just give them your bank details, you know, when you first sign up. Mm-hmm. And then you're just betting at the click, at the tap of the phone. It's so easy, it's so accessible. And it's not betting on the results of the match. It's betting in play,
right,
on the next goal, who's going to score it, the next throw in, the next corner. And that, Darren McGee and others have said to me, is believed to be much more addictive because it's like the rapid adrenaline rush of rapid gambling.
It's a video game. It's like another video game.
Yeah. It's all the same kind of addictive app technology, mobile phone technology, but it's allied to them basically losing their money on gambling and giving it to gambling companies. And this guy told him, and the groups were 18 to 35 that he worked with, he told him that now all the Champions League means is opportunities to gamble. Mm. That they can't, these guys can't watch a football match without having money on it. It's boring. They can barely watch a whole match because what's the point? And so he produced this word, the gamblification of football, that football has become an activity, a platform for gambling for this younger generation. And that is exactly what the betting companies have sought to achieve. And it's just so depressing to find that they've won.
You know, and when we talk about gambling in North America, more often than not, because of our history, I mean, it seems to me more often than not, David, the focus is on games being fixed. I mean, basketball almost disappeared as a sport because of fixing allegations. But it seems to me that's significant. But I think the bigger issue is the impact on the fans. Then, I mean, I'm more afraid of the next generation of fans, especially given how many sports there are in North America. And you think about baseball's played every day. There could be 15 games every day. That's what concerns me more than games being fixed. And I'm more concerned about the fans.
Yeah, and the games are very long. So this is like 3-4 hours in which the betting companies would have open season to keep people basically gambling. And that's what people have to realise, is in-play gambling. So in your case, it would be the next pitches. When is the next inning going to end? When is going to be the next home run? When is going to be the next hit? They will develop all these products. And one of the campaigners that I've spoken to, whose son did kill himself as a result of gambling addiction. And they run this campaign in the UK called Gambling with Lives, which is very well worth people looking up and Googling. It's horrendously depressing. They work with the parents of other young men, and they said they were all normal, happy, bright, popular, sociable, sport-loving young men by definition. And they might start off having a bet thinking it's just good fun. There is no health warning. There is no other warning. There are no barriers. There's no restrictions. And these guys are dead. And that, I 100% agree with you, is so much more of an issue than match fixing. I mean, match fixing, in my opinion, is not really an issue at the top level.
Mm-hmm.
And you find instances of match fixing at quite lower levels of football, semi-professional levels of football, minor tennis tournaments.
Right.
Because you need players to fix matches, really. I mean, you can fix matches through officials, but really you need players. And so if your players at the very top level of football, baseball, basketball, whatever it is, an American sport, you are earning so much money that there's nothing that that a betting company can give you that would be worth chucking a match for. So we used to have match fixing back in the day in the 1960s when footballers weren't paid very much money. There was a very famous scandal in the 1960s. But at the top level of sport, if North America is getting exercised about the risk of match fixing, I think they're looking at the wrong target. I think they've got a major social problem heading their way.
David, thank you so much for joining us. It's a terrific read, as indeed your stuff always is, but it's also depressing in a lot of ways as well.
It's very important to highlight. So thanks very much for your interest in it. And, you know, you are absolutely right to be highlighting this issue. And as I say, I'm actually really saddened that North America is opening itself up in this way.